In 2020, a state ban on the sale of flavored e-cigarettes took effect, but in the ensuing years, retailers and manufacturers have tried to skirt these restrictions, according to Democratic lawmakers and health officials who have concerns about what is still available for sale in the Empire State. For more on these concerns and how they could be addressed legislatively, we're joined on the Capitol Press Room by Kevin O'Flaherty, Director of Advocacy for the Northeast Region of the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Thanks, David. It's good to be here.
And we're also joined by Max Ferris, Director of Environmental Health for the Albany County Health Department. Welcome to the show, Max.
Thank you, David.
So for starters, what sort of restrictions are in place right now for flavored vaping products that could not be sold in New York?
Well, you'd never know it, David, by going into any local retailers that you might come across when you're walking around Albany or other cities across the state. But all flavored tobacco e-cigarette products should be off the market. You shouldn't be finding mint. You shouldn't be finding menthol e-cigarettes. You shouldn't be finding, you know, bubble gum or all the more sort of hideous flavors that are really, really targeted to youth. But they're still on the shelves. And it's not because the law needs to be changed substantially in terms of what's covered. It's just that there are some enforcement loopholes in the New York law that retailers have taken advantage of.
Well, yeah, what are the limitations of the existing statute when it comes to vaping products, which needs to be addressed either legislatively or through regulations?
Right now, retailers can claim if an inspector goes into the store and they see products on the shelves that shouldn't be there, retailers can say, oh, we're not selling this to New Yorkers. We've got an out-of-state business, or we're selling it to somebody in Texas, et cetera, even when there's no evidence that they're doing so, no infrastructure, no website to try to facilitate those types of sales. So this bill would close that loophole and say, look, if you can't sell these things to New Yorkers, you can't keep them in your retail operation here. Also, retailers have basically denied access to county health officials and other inspectors. They just say, hey, get out of my store. And there's nothing in the law to prevent them from doing that. There's nothing that makes that a penalty. So this would require them to allow access. Distributors in New York State can continue to sell products to retailers in New York that those retailers can't sell. This is not all of the loopholes that this law would close, but it would create enforcement around those loopholes and prevent those things from continuing to happen.
According to the memorandum accompanying the legislation that your coalition is putting, tobacco companies have allegedly crafted ways to circumvent these bans in terms of the products that they do sell in New York under the guise of legality. So what is it that manufacturers and retailers are doing to try to mimic the flavors or menthol that is not allowed in vaping products?
Sure. This has happened, to be honest with you, David, more in states that have already banned the sale of menthol cigarettes and combustible tobacco products. New York didn't do that. They only banned flavored vapes. But two states, California and Massachusetts, have banned menthol cigarettes. And what the industry then did was they said, oh, well, we're not going to use a menthol flavoring. We're going to put in a chemical that provides a cooling sensation that basically mimics the impact and the effect of menthol. And any common user, when they use the product, they're like, oh, that tastes like menthol, and it doesn't taste like tobacco. We're not aware of the industry doing that with e-cigarettes yet, but they certainly could. And we're just trying to stay one step ahead of them in terms of that provision. Another thing that the industry did back when the law was passed was have an exemption added in that exempted products that had received a PMTA authorization from the FDA if they also had a flavor. And the FDA so far has not awarded an authorization to any flavored e-cigarettes, but the fact that this exemption exists in the law creates confusion for parents, for inspectors, and retailers are using that and saying, oh, well, this has an exemption in the law. The fact is that Congress gave states the power to keep these products, all flavored products, off the market. They specifically reserved the rights to do that to the states. And if New York State made the decision in 2020 that flavored e-cigarettes are mainly hooking kids and we should keep them off the market, that, you know, we shouldn't allow this loophole that doesn't have any real product that's been approved to create confusion and make it harder to enforce the law. And the proof of this problem is that there are five states that have a ban on the sale of all flavored e-cigarettes. New York is the only one with that FDA PMTA exemption, and it has the highest continued availability of products that should not be on the market.
Well, before we move on, let me reintroduce you both for listeners just joining us. We're speaking with Kevin O'Flaherty, Director of Advocacy for the Northeast Region of the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, and Max Ferris, Director of Environmental Health for the Albany County Health Department. So Max, Kevin outlined some of the challenges of implementing the 2020 restrictions. Can you talk a little bit about what the experience has been like here in Albany County?
When we go into some of these retail facilities, you know, we're walking in the door generally with an iPad and with educational materials to identify compliance with the regulations. And when we're going into these shops and we're looking for some illegal activities such as flavored vape products, you know, we're really trying to educate the facilities to ensure that they understand what the state regulations are. Generally speaking, we have good compliance with education. When we are met with resistance to the law, that's when we impose monetary penalties to try to get the facilities to comply with the state statutes.
So the experience that Kevin outlined described sort of stores not even letting inspectors do their job. Has that been something that you've encountered?
You know, it really has, David. You know, just as recent as yesterday, you know, our staff experience intimidation and harassment. And it's unfortunate to really say that. And, you know, it's one of those things that as public health officials, you know, that are tasked with protecting public health, it's unfortunate that our staff are being subjected to this type of behavior.
And how does this compare to what county health officials might experience when they're trying to, say, conduct a health review of a local dining establishment?
It's completely different, right? You know, these products are illegal and they are predominantly a cash business and they're extremely lucrative. So when we tell a facility that they cannot sell these products, it's like we're taking away their livelihood. And because we don't have those enforcement mechanisms that Kevin had mentioned, it really restricts our ability to get these products off of the shelves.
So Kevin, what is it about this legislation that, if enacted, would really empower county health officials to enforce the existing law?
Well, it would make it a crime with a penalty to refuse access to an inspector. So straight off the bat, there's a consequence for, you know, not allowing an inspector to come in the store. And right now there is no consequence. It's common sense. We would think that, you know, that the law would require retailers to allow folks in, but this particular law does not. It wasn't seen as necessary in 2019 or 2020, but clearly that's become the case, I think, kind of along the lines of what Max was saying, because of the nature of these products and the nature of this business. And you have to realize, too, that part of the reason that this enforcement has been so problematic is when the law was enacted and some of the things that were going on at the same time. It was enacted in the spring of 2020. We never got a signing ceremony on this bill because we were in lockdown with COVID. And health departments across the state were really, staff were being diverted from what they normally did to focus on COVID interventions to try to protect public safety there. Also at the same time, cannabis was legalized in marijuana, well, decriminalized and then legalized. And the step in between the two, while the consumers and the state was waiting for sort of the license holders to be awarded and those businesses to get up and running, created a gray area that a lot of companies just sort of jumped into to try to sell those products illegally. And if you're selling cannabis, why not sell flavored vapes illegally as well? So, you know, there's sort of a double whammy that made retailers feel they could get away with it. And now we've got to go back and kind of do the common sense enforcement things like allowing inspectors in and making it a penalty if you don't, and saying you can't just keep these products on your shelves and say you're not selling them, and prevent distributors from continuing to basically provide this product, to source this product for retailers that can't sell them.
Max, we've heard repeatedly over the years that county health officials are already stretched very thin. So if you were granted this broader authority to conduct these inspections and really enforce the 2020 law, do you feel like you have the capacity to do so?
Yeah, David, look, we're already doing this job. And, you know, because of the ambiguity with the flavor vape ban, you know, the amount of work and effort on the back end for us to impose penalties and, you know, perform all the necessary paperwork to have them in for hearings, you know, having this clear cut and having this, you know, presented to the community that these are not allowed to be sold in New York State makes our job as public health inspectors and officials that much easier.
Well, finally, Kevin, the idea of restricting access to flavored vaping products was largely driven by the idea that we don't want to get young people hooked on nicotine products and get them consuming tobacco. But if we have a law on the books that says you got to be at least 21 to purchase any of these products, why do we need these additional enforcement measures and additional requirements?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question and one we hear a lot, David. You know, these products were designed by the industry, and you can go back in industry documents to see why they started adding flavors, sweet flavors, all kinds of flavors to tobacco products when they started doing it back in the 60s and 70s, and then really kind of went into hyperdrive with e-cigarettes in the teens. These products were designed to hook kids, and we shouldn't be surprised if they're on the market that they're going to find their way into the hands of kids. You know, it may not be, you know, there are retailers out there that are selling to kids against, you know, in violation of the 21 law. But a lot of these products are being sold to older friends or to parents or to aunts and uncles, et cetera. And kids are going to try them. They're going to want to try them because they're sweet, and they think that they're safe as a result of it. Research has shown for decades now that the two factors that are the most determinative of whether youth ever start becoming, you know, using a tobacco product or becoming addicted are the price of the product and whether flavors of it are available. If the price is expensive and there aren't kid-friendly flavors available, they generally don't start. If it's cheap and there are flavors, they generally do. They're much more likely to. That's why the state did this in 2020. We saw what was happening with these e-cigarettes with 15,000 different flavors. And they said, look, no, we're going to take these off the market because they were still making it into the hands of kids and into our classrooms, regardless of the age of sale laws.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We've been speaking with Kevin O'Flaherty. They're the Director of Advocacy for the Northeast Region of the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. Thanks for making the time, Kevin.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
And we've also been hearing from Max Ferris, Director of Environmental Health for the Albany County Health Department. Thanks again for joining us, Max.
Thank you, David.
And for more Capital Pressroom content, visit capitalpressroom.org or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. And if you listen to us from an Apple device, make sure to leave us a rating and a review so it helps other people find the show.
Support for the Capital Pressroom provided by Better Buildings New York. Better Buildings New York supports clean, healthy, zero-emissions buildings and thermal energy networks. It's in favor of the New York Heat Act. More information at betterbuildingsnewyork.org.